Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host and partner in crime, Sandy Fowler. And together with our guests, we cover lots of relevant topics about things that parents of teens and 20-somethings need to know. I can't even believe that we have a year under our belts with a bank of over 50 shows over at mightyparenting.com. So don't worry if you missed any of those. You can go and access them on the website. So let's talk about today. Today we are addressing a topic that honestly I believe is overlooked too often when we think about building our parenting skills or building a strong sense of personal responsibility in our kids. For me, I'm recovering helicopter parent. Let's just put it out there right at the beginning. And in hindsight, you know, I really wish I had done a better job of not taking responsibility for every one of my kids' behaviors or their happiness or the success they had. You know, I just embraced it all and took it on as my responsibility. And in some ways, I think that that really limited them as they entered those late teen years and early 20s. And I wish I would have just given them a little more guidance than that quote, you know, I can prevent them from any difficulties and protect them from all the things. And it's that thought process that I really wish I would have done a better job, you know?
I know, Judy, you and I have talked about this before, and I think that in our current culture, that's the norm. The norm is doing too much. So as parents, as we're trying to figure out what to do, because we don't have a manual, and the way we learn things is watching other people, you know, going back to our own experiences. So as we look around at other parents to kind of see, well, you know, how do I handle this? How are other people handling this? What we see isn't really what's best for our kids. That, you know, our culture is doing too much. And that is why we are thrilled to have Bill Busey here with us today. Bill is an accomplished author and speaker on personal growth and professional success. He is the author of nearly 20 books, including 3 national bestsellers, and 2 of those he specifically talks about raising our kids and dealing with our teenagers. Dr. Busey served as the Director of Research and Development at the Academy of Sports Psychology and is the creator of MindRev Labs and Design Life Training. And he shares his brilliance and his wisdom through his speaking, his writing, and guest appearances like this one. So, Bill, thank you so much for joining us here on Mighty Parenting today.
It is my pleasure. In fact, with a lead-in like that, you just made my day. I appreciate it.
I can feel the smile going across the airwaves, right?
Oh, my God. No, I'm blushing. It's like, wow, that's the nicest thing anybody has said about me in weeks.
Well, there you go. There you go. Well, you know, Bill, one of the things, I'm just going to jump right in here, and often our teen behaviors kind of give us a little bit of insight about whether or not they're being responsible. Mm-hmm. But you and I had a conversation before this interview, and you shared something that really has had me thinking for a little while here. And I want to kick off the interview with you talking about this idea that you shared that our teens' behavior is actually tied to and a reflection of their ability to adapt. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about adaption and how that plays a role in lives and in our kids?
I'd be glad to. You know, I got to tell you both. We've raised 4. We have 4 adult kids. So we've been through the teenage years with 2 boys, 2 girls. And what I can tell you above everything else is that teens are incredibly easy if you just take a real simple look at this. in the special report we talked about that we can make that offer at the end of the of this interview. But in there, I talk about the fact that at about the age of 13, kids become abstract thinkers. And that abstract thinking ability kind of launches all kinds of the craziness that makes us want to go into the nut house. And the fact of the matter is that a lot of the things, now this is going to sound kind of crazy, but a lot of the stuff we see our teenagers doing, they are doing because they adapted to something. It's not that they're bad. It's not that they're, you know, being difficult or rebellious or anything else. All of their behavior is an adaptation to something. Even the stuff we don't like them talking on the phones or playing too many video games or being smart Alex or whatever it is, they are doing, everything they do is an adaptation to something. And to really understand them and really be able to handle them in a really effective way, you got to find out what they're adapting to. And a lot of times you find out that they're adapting to, you know, things that their peers are saying. They're adapting to demands that they see, you know, maybe things that they're seeing on television or on social media. Everything is an adaptation. And if you start to look at them that way, they start not looking so crazy. In fact, some of the stuff they do kind of makes sense, and it makes it a lot easier to figure out what to do with them.
Mm-hmm. And looking at it from that perspective kind of takes a huge weight off my shoulders.
Yeah.
I don't have to be responsible for every single thing, or their behavior isn't a absolute direct correlation to something I've done.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, it should take a lot of pressure off of you, because most of the stuff that they're doing has nothing to do with you. Most of their adaptations, you're just watching. You know, let's face it, at about 13, 14, 15, research has shown that by far the greatest impact on your teenager is their peers and not their parents. I mean, we like to think that we're responsible so much for all this stuff, but man, they are on their own program at that point, and you're just sort of watching, and you can take a lot of pressure off yourself. And that's why, you know, in a lot of the training and the stuff I do, I suggest to parents, to the extent that they can, they move from being a parent to being a coach, because you can't really parent them anywhere. You can't tell them to do stuff, because 9 times out of 10, they're really not even listening to you that much. They're on their own program. And what your job needs to become is not a bulldozer or a helicopter, but much more of a coach saying, I said this with my kids all the time. I said, like the common refrain was, so what are you going to do about it? No matter what their problem was, so what are you going to do about it? And just put it on them, because they're going to do what they want to do anyway. So it makes sense to become a key advisor to them, a coach, asking them questions and getting out of the role of always being sort of in the driver's seat and telling them what to do. But slowly, as you're able to, this doesn't happen overnight, but move into the position of being a coach to your kids and asking them what they're going to do and putting the responsibility of choice back on them.
Well, that's something else too, Bill. I noticed, you know, as my kids got older and they forced me to do more of that, is it does take off that pressure and it releases some of that. Yeah. But I want to back up just a minute, because my brain is working very hard at this. Okay, I get what you're telling me about their behaviors are them adapting to something going on in their life. Mm-hmm. And here at Mighty Parenting, we always teach parents, live curiously. And that fits in really well with that, right? Get curious. Beautiful. About what's happening in Absolutely. Your life, what's going on that could be causing this behavior. Mm-hmm. So as a parent, if I, you know, sit back and I take some time and I watch and I see, oh, okay, so the friends are saying this or doing this, or the team or the school is saying this or doing this, then what do I do? You know, when I identify this is the thing that's causing this behavior that is annoying the living daylights out of me, or that I think is wrong or dangerous or harmful to my child, once I identify that, then what do I do?
Yeah, that's a great question, Sandy, and it's one that faces all of us. One of the things that I think we need to keep in mind is that our teenagers live in pretty much a constant state of conflict, I'm going to call it. It's a conflict between You know, getting along and being accepted by their peer groups and obeying the rules at home and doing good at school. And, you know, if they're involved with athletics, doing well in those. And, you know, they feel torn and they spend a lot of time quietly in their own minds trying to decide who they're going to go with and what they're going to do. And I think that as parents of teenagers, particularly as they get older and you move more to this whole realm of being a coach rather than a parent to them, it makes a lot of sense to identify that right up front and acknowledge that they live with a lot of conflicts in their heads and to just begin a conversation with them about what the conflicts are, what kind of pressures are they feeling, where's the pressure coming from, how are they handling it, do they wish they had better resources or solutions for some of those conflicts, and just become part of their internal conversation. I suppose that's the best way to look at it. I was a therapist for about 10 years back in the 80s. And one of the things that was just seemed to be just sort of came natural to me, I guess that's why I gravitated to that business, is saying, look, help, let me in on the conversation that you're having with yourself. Are you handling your issues well? And become really, you know, become more inquisitive rather than, you know, put them in a headlock and tell them how they're going to live.
I love that phrase. Let me in on the conversation you're having with yourself.
Yeah. In the online course that I do, I talk a lot about the events versus stories that we tell ourselves about the events. So something will happen, you know, a girl will reject you for a date or a guy, you know, won't give you the time of day. And you start telling yourself a story. Well, I'm no good, or I'm, you know, or I'm ugly, or I'm dumb, or, you know, you start telling yourself these stories and the story becomes the issue, not the event. And I always tried to focus the kids on, so let's go back to what happened. A guy said, you know, a guy wouldn't look at you, or a girl rejected you on a date. Rather than telling yourself this convoluted story, why don't you try something else? What else might work different? And you become essentially, Sandy, to your point, you become part of the conversation with them. And in that, that's the way you coach people, right? Saying, well, you know, you're fine, or you're pretty. And, you know, you got to say that stuff anyway, parent. That's what parents do. But more, much as you can, migrate your conversation to becoming part of what they're already saying in their heads, and you're not going to talk them out of it. You know, you really aren't. Although you can go a long way with your kids to identify the difference between the story that they're telling yourself, that themselves, in the event that they went through. That oftentimes is very helpful for them to realize that they're really getting just spun up in these stories that are just stupid and make no sense. And we all do this, by the way. In fact, we'll do it. We all do it the rest of our lives. It's a good skill to learn to separate the story from the event.
Exactly. And it almost kind of goes to that whole personal responsibility. When you take it from a story, you know, from the story to the event, you are giving responsibility back to your kid.
Yep, you really are. And it kind of goes back to that, to the statement that we used to, you know, I remember so clearly the kids would come to us, you know, and with a problem or an issue. And the first thing I always said, so what are you going to do about it? It's like, I don't know. It's not my life. It's your life. What are you going to do? You know, so you got a D, and you want to, you know, you want to fly jet fighters. Well, I can't fly jet fighters with D's. What are you going to do? Mm-hmm. And it, you know, obviously when they're younger, you have to set up rules in your home and you have to do all that stuff, but make sure the conversation you have with them is, rather than you being the fountain of all the answers and all the power, you're basically giving it back to them saying, hey, look, man, this is your life. What are you going to do? Kiss the way they want.
It takes away the pushback. That's one of the problems that we run into with teens is they are at that point where they're pulling away from us, where they are becoming their own person more than ever, and they're becoming more independent. And as parents, if we go in and lay down the rules, that gives them something to push back against. But with your technique of going, okay, this happened, mm-hmm. what are you going to do? It just pulls the pushback away, that conflict, that friction, that tension that you can get.
Boy, well put. And you know, it's kind of funny because I it's funny you should say that, because I'm having flashbacks now. back when the kids were younger and they were teenagers, I was always surprised that everybody else was fighting with their kids. And I didn't fight with my kids much. There weren't things to fight about. It was like, well, this is just sort of a, this situation, whatever it is, it could be anything. It could be, so what are you going to do? Do you have a plan? Have you thought this through? Have you talked to anybody else that's faced the same thing? And in that, I sort of just had a conversation. I joined in the conversation they're having with themselves in their own head. And it never, we just didn't fight much. It was more like, let's solve this problem. Let's solve the problem you're up against. And, you know, sometimes they would just, it would really open them up. They would just want to talk about their, you know, their sense of, you know, not being in control. Or, and then it just led to all kinds of good things. If rather than just give them the answer, or as I said, you know, metaphorically, you put them in a headlock, that doesn't work. They will adapt to that.
Yeah.
Negatively.
When you create a space, a safe space, which is what you're doing by not telling them what they have to do or how they have to do it, or even indicating that they have to do it your way by going, huh, so this is what's going on in your life. What are you going to do about it? That starts creating that safe space. And I know, you know, with my one daughter, she is not a big talker, but things will build up. And when I do that, and I'll just ask a question that's kind of an opening space question, man, it just all comes out. You know, she starts doing laps around our kitchen table. I sit up on the counter and she does laps, and she just talks and talks and talks and talks her own way through it.
Wow, Sandy, one of our daughters was the same way. And she needed us just to shut up and just let her go. And we did. You know, I didn't jump in and try and give her answers or solutions because, you know, being a guy, I mean, that's what I want to do, right? And my wife,
girl, I still want to do the same. Yeah, exactly.
And she just wanted to ramp. That was fine, and that really worked for her. One of the things that I think it taught me is that, you know, every kid is a little bit different. They have their own quirks and their own things that are unique to them. And to really just pay attention and find out what works for them. Sometimes even ask them, do you need the solution here? Or do you need me just to listen? Or like, and again, it's joining the conversation. Because inside their mind, they know exactly what they want and what they need. They may not be able to express it well to you, but they know it. And it was also, you know, and I've written about this a lot, just this basic idea that kids act like they have all the answers, but they really don't, and they know they don't. And the best thing you can do for them is not to embarrass them, not to, you know, crank the pressure, but really just back off and say, hey, listen, man, I'm here to help you. You seem to have all the answers here, so I suggest you do one of them soon. and if it works for you, great. I know my one son came to me when he was 16. Said, Dad, I want a car. I said, I want you to have a car too. He said, what kind of car can I get? And I said, well, I don't know. If I were you, I think I'd get a Corvette. But it's up to you. I don't care what kind of car you have. He says, are you going to pay for it? I said, no. No. But I still think you should get a Corvette. So go get a job.
Right.
And it was real matter of fact. It wasn't mean. It was just like, no, man, I think you should have a car too.
Well, you know, that's a great example, Bill. And you mentioned, you know, that parents often want to jump in and give answers. So let's go there for a second and kind of talk about how we as parents contribute to the issues of our kids' behaviors. You know, you've given us a couple of great examples for how to do it, but do you see parents doing it wrong, or can you point some of those kind of things?
I think it was Judy that asked that question.
I think
you started off by saying you're a recovering helicopter parent. Perfect example. I just see too many parents like assuming responsibility. You talk about building personal responsibility. Well, that doesn't, you know, we're trying to build their personal responsibility, not yours. You know what I mean? And the best thing you can do is to get out of the way. And also, one of the online courses I have is called Life Success Lab. And in that, I'm talking directly to teenage kids and early 20s. And one of the things I really stress there is learning the power of assuming responsibility for things that go wrong and not letting your parents rescue you. Like, sort of, kind of the message is have some pride in yourself. Don't expect your parents to come in and clean up this mess. Like get a backbone and say, oh, mom and dad, step aside. I'll take care of this. Teacher, don't worry. Step aside. I'll deal with this. And learn. It's something that I think if we call our kids to that, not in a like a throwdown embarrassing way, but it's like, you know, there's something good and strengthening about saying, no, mom and dad, don't interfere with this. I'll take care of this. I'll step up. I'll be stronger. I'll raise my game. I'll level up and I'll take care of this. And the only way to do that is to do it, is to let them do it. You can't rescue them on one hand and expect them to do that on the other. You know what I mean? You just can't. And it's so natural for parents to want to rescue their kids. That's why I say you really need to move from being a parent to being a coach. It's not where you're going to rush in and you know, you're not going to change their diapers when they're 16, for God's sakes. You know, you're going to say, you're going to approach it like a coach. Like, dude, what are you going to do here? You've made quite a little mess here. Yeah, you flunked out. And now you want me to go talk to the teacher and see if I can get your grade changed. Well, that's not my job, you know.
Well, something that is, there's fear involved here, especially because we have, a society and a culture where this generation, we now have teenagers who were shielded from a lot of things when they were younger. And so we got to be honest, a lot of our kids, their skill set for dealing with these problems is limited. As they get into high school or when they're in college, the stakes start to feel really large to parents. So do you have tips for us in managing our own fear and emotions around this idea of the stakes are too big to let them do it themselves now?
Yeah, Sandy, you are a beauty. That is a great, great point. So many parents are parenting from a position of fear. And I know that when Judy and I had the conversation, in the lead up to all of this, you know, Judy, you asked me the question, what's the one thing that you'd like to, you know, what's the one, you know, driving message? And that is fearlessness is where it's at. Every kid adapts to this, to the environment they're in. And if you make it possible for them to never adapt, but just to be a kid until they're 18, yeah, they're going to have a rough go, but they will adapt because everybody adapts. It's what we do. And one of the things that I hope will make parents feel a little bit more fearless in their parenting is to understand that their kid, that the healthiest thing your kid can do is to have the opportunity to adapt to life. And that's going to happen with you or without you. You just can't, you know, and we all know this inside of ourselves because we went through it. At some point, your parents can't do anything else for you. They've done all they can do. And then you have to grow up and adapt. The quicker you do that, I think, the better. But even if you start at 18, they eventually are going to have to adapt. And the best thing you can do, well, sometimes it's the hardest thing, and that is to surrender and detach, let go, and let your kids adapt to the world that's going to face them. And they'll be fine. They will be fine. They're always fine. They're always fine. You know, and there are, let me just back up and say that there's a small percentage of kids that don't adapt. They end up either in trouble or they end up in, you know, institutional care, or they end up a lot of places. But almost every single kid adapts. They may not be the kid that you want them to be, but they adapt and they find their way and they find happiness. And, you know, sometimes the hardest thing to do is to calm yourself down. That's why I spend a lot of time talking to parents about, look, control what you can control. The only thing you can control is you. Your focus, your wisdom. You can't make them do anything, particularly as they get older. You just can't do it. You can try. You'll go crazy trying. The most important thing you can do is to stay focused on yourself and keep yourself in check. Keep thinking right. Stay a coach and help them create a life that they can adapt to. That was a long answer to your question. I hope that helped.
Yeah, I think it's great. And one of the things, you know, we say it over and over again is that our kids are watching us all the time.
Yeah.
And more so than what we say or what we yell out, it's what we do that sets the example. So yeah. You telling us that the biggest thing we can do as a parent is actually to keep our own self in check and live our life that way, we're going to be giving our kids such a great example to follow, because that's what they're going to adapt to.
Exactly. Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know another thing I think that happens, and you just reminded me of this when you said that, is that so many times we have a vision for our kids, and we want our kids to live in our vision for the future, and we don't really give them we get upset because they're veering off the path that we have in our heads for them, not they have in their head for themselves. And it goes back to what you said, Sandy. Join in the conversation they're having with themselves. Find out what their vision is for the future. Join in with that. That's the only thing that's going to work. I'm telling you, that's the only thing that's going to work. And to focus on keeping yourself focused on them and not your own vision for them. Because that's the stuff that drives parents just batty. They think, well, you know, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that, because they aren't aligning with the parent's vision. Hey, look, man, let go of that. That was over years ago.
Well, you said, Bill, they may not be becoming the kid you want them to be. They may not be the kid you want them to be. And Judy and I had talked about in our episode on friction that the distance between our expectations and the reality that's being lived out just creates friction in our relationship with our kid. And that's absolutely what's going to happen here. It's what you're telling us too, is yeah, the kid may not do what you envision for their life. They're still a great person, an amazing person. They can still be happy. Just, you know, you didn't necessarily have the inside track on what would be the best path for their life or what would make them happy.
You know, as a matter of fact, you may be holding them back. You know, you think that you're, you know, we as parents tend to think that we're doing all we can for kids, and maybe we are. But it all depends on what they want. You know, my youngest son, Zach, he went to college after high school, and he had no idea what he was going to do. And I had an idea what I wanted him to do, but he had a totally different idea. And his idea was much better than mine. He's now a captain, for American Airlines. So his vision for himself was much bigger than mine was. And see, I could have very easily directed him to go into sell insurance or something. Not that selling insurance is bad. In fact, it's a great profession. That's the reason I want him to do it. But he's having a lot more fun flying jets, I'll tell you that. And, and here's the important thing. It taught me a great lesson that you need to spend some time finding out what they want, you know, and helping them decide what they want. Not telling them what you want them. And again, I don't mean to be redundant here, but this is all about them. I mean, in their life vision, the best thing you can give them is ambition and fearlessness and a sense of courage that, you know, come what may, you know, we'll make lemons out of lemonade no matter what life brings to us. That's a pretty good attitude to get inside your kid. And you can't drive that in. They find that out like you. I think it was you, Judy, that said that, by watching you. That's why you've got to have that attitude. You've got to demonstrate that. You've got to start smiling more.
Right. And we as parents have to just, I think it boils down to, we have to create an atmosphere that our kids feel safe coming back to when things blow up. And then we can guide them and use our experience. And if we don't know the answer, we say it. We get curious with them and walk alongside them.
Oh, that's
instead of telling them what to do.
Your curiosity theme is right on the money. You know, just be curious about how big life can be. How much, as I used to tell my kids, how much, you know, how much enjoyment can you stand? You know, how about you have a life instead of one that is so, you know, filled with challenges and bad stuff? Why not, like, how good can we make this? How curious can we be? How curious can you be about yourself, about life? I think your curiosity theme is right on, man. I love it.
And it's always, you know, you mentioned, Bill, that we don't know what's in our kids' head. Mm-hmm. At the very top of the show, you said that what's in their head is theirs and theirs alone. And our job is to get in there and understand and get in that conversation that they're having with themselves.
Yeah.
And when we have those expectations or those thoughts of what we believe is the thing that will make them happy, we're doing them a disservice.
Yeah.
We are blocking them, and we don't know. As much as we know our children, we don't know really and truly what makes them happy, because so often they're trying to please us.
Yep.
And what we think makes them happy is just what they think we want them to think.
It's complicated, isn't it?
It is.
That's why it makes great sense, rather than to go in and be the helicopter parent and bulldoze their way, you know, clear the path out. Say, so let's work through this together. And sometimes even with my own kids now, you know, all my kids are grown up now. We frequently get together and you know what? They still don't know what they want to do. Some of
right.
them, two of them, you know, and they're adults and they've got careers, but it's like, this is a never ending thing. So don't get all hung up in one answer or one career path or one way of living. There's a lot of ways to skin this cat. And the best thing you can do is probably be curious with them about what's next. And you know, there's something about that even sounds refreshing, you know? And you can start this, by the way, when they're 15. You don't have to wait till they're 23. You know, you can start this conversation as early as you can. Become that mentor, that coach, that sort of the curiosity guru. When they come, mm-hmm. you know, make your, you know, when you come to mind, to make you be the person that's like, wow, I'm going to talk to mom and dad about this. They'll have some crazy. They'll listen to me. You know, they'll be a good sounding board for me.
Well, really, you know, Mill said, you know. You said you can start when they're 15. We can start it when they're 8 or 3. It's just
yep.
obviously we don't expect them to have very many answers when they're 3, but we can have a conversation out loud. Instead of just thinking something through in our head, we can go, what can we do about this? And
talk
out loud and go through our thoughts. But I had one other thing. Mm-hmm. I'm loving what we're talking about, and it's easy to sit back and go, yeah, I'm doing these things, or maybe I can tweak it a little bit. What I'm wondering is, as a parent who, if I'm listening, obviously I care very much about my kid and my parenting, sure. and I'm willing to take a look at it. What are some of the signs that we're not doing these things that you're telling us are best for our kids?
Yeah. I think, first of all, I think the signs that we often look for are rebellion. I got to tell you, rebellion is very normal. I mean, it's very, you know, they're trying to figure it out. I mean, they rebel because they are, because they don't know what else to do. And they're not mature enough to have thought up new things. The things you should probably look for is the pressure you feel in yourself to jump in and take over for them. The pressure that you feel inside yourself that they're not living up to your expectations. The pressure inside yourself that you are, that you must do something that, basically the pressure that you put yourself under. I think that the most successful parents that I've worked with and I've watched because I look out for them, you know, they have a much more relaxed, we'll figure this out kind of a attitude about them. It's we're collaborators on this. If you feel you're not collaborating with your kid on their life, that's a pretty good sign that you got to try something different. Because you need to position yourself as a come along beside them, not as a person that's going to, you know, blaze the way for them and solve all their problems, but a collaborator. And I think that the closer you can get to that inside yourself, the better, the happier you will be, and the more successful you will be. By the way, I want to say this too, Sandy, because this is important. These things, if you've never done this before, it takes a little while to kind of grow into it. Don't think you're going to walk home tonight and like kick the door open and, you know, say, you know, things to be different around here. No, this takes time, and you need to, there's some skills you need to practice. In the special report we're going to talk about here, I talk about those in there, but it's all about learning a little bit more about how your kids are thinking, how they're viewing their life, and how you can become a part of that, a collaboration with them, instead of like just judge and jury, which is, I think, sometimes what we often do.
Okay, so this has really been a great conversation. I just want to go back and sum up a few things and kind of refresh our minds as to what we're thinking about here. So as parents, you know, we look at our kids and we look at behaviors that they're doing, and what's really going on is whatever our teens are doing, Bill, you say that they're doing it because they've adapted to something. So if we want to help them shift something, then what we do is we need to go back and look and see what are they adapting to. And then we can have that conversation with them where we acknowledge that they are, as you said, in this constant state of conflict or tension between trying to fit in with peers, trying to follow the rules at home, trying to deal with being on the team, trying to handle their friends. And we can begin a conversation by acknowledging that they're living with those conflicts and then kind of go, hey, and I love this. Judy said the same thing. Let me in on the conversation you're having with yourself. Mm-hmm. So we can find out where they are and where they're going and encourage them to think this through and to find a solution. This isn't let me in on the conversation so I can solve it for you. Mm-hmm. It's just encouraging them forward. And as you said, becoming a coach and helping them in that coaching identify the difference between the story they're telling themselves about events and the actual events that have taken place. And along the way, as parents, we're going to make mistakes, and that's okay, but we can start recognizing our mistakes and changing things. And some of the common mistakes we make are taking responsibility for our kids' actions, parenting from a position of fear, forgetting that the only person that we can control is ourselves, and expecting our kids to follow our vision for their future, when what we really need to do is spend some time finding out what it is that they want and then instilling in them the ambition, the fearlessness, the courage to actually go out and get what they want, and let them know that, hey, stuff happens and we'll help you. We'll help you make lemons out of that lemonade. And Bill, I know you have an exercise that you can teach us, but we're running out of time on the podcast. What we'd love to do is to still do that exercise, but we'll do it in the bonus content.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
All right. So, but what we do want to make sure is that everybody knows how they can find you. And also you have that special report that is free to download. Mm-hmm. So if you can let us know how to get that, that would be great.
Sure. My online virtual training system is at designlifetraining.com. On there, if you get on the first page, there's a little PDF icon for my special report, Solving Teenagers, a Concise Blueprint to Understand and Impact Young People. And then you can also look down there. I've got a course called Design Life Training. I've got another one called Life Success Labs that's specifically for kids to watch. I say kids, 13 through 23 is that age group. So that's, they go there. There's all kinds of stuff there, all kinds of resources.
Well, Bill, I love the fact that you have resources for parents as well as for our teens and 20-somethings. So it's like we can really get some great insight and information from you. And today has been amazing. We appreciate you coming on and want to thank our listeners for joining us today. And all of you, thank you for being part of the Mighty Parenting community. If it's your first time listening, welcome. And be sure, everyone, to check out mightyparenting.com to see all the support we have for you. And remember, you are a mighty parent. Thank you so much. And this is Judy Davis and Sam Fowler. And have a great week.